Welcome, Dr. James Beckett, Sports Card Insights. Thanks, sponsors, Beckett Media, Beckett Grading, Beckett Authentication, ComC.com, Burbank Sports Cards, Mike Stadium Sports Cards, Heritage Auctions, Huggins & Scott Auctions, Upper Deck, Panini, and Topps. Brian Gray was over here. This is another part of our conversation we share in common, trying to find what other people pass over we think has great potential in some cases. It's zigging where others zag. Like I said, we shared that and we discussed how low would you go. It's not about what you paid for it. It's what it could either currently or eventually be worth. So that's the moral of this story. So thanks, Brian. And here it is.
Brian, thanks for being here. Something I think is common to both of us. We have a lower limit than most people for what we're interested in the hobby. The modern hobby, many people are not interested if it's not at least a $100 card, let's say, or at least a $1,000 card. If you talk to some of the influencers or listen to some of the loudest megaphones, it's 10,000 and up. Yet you and I both, I think, find a lot of interest in lower price cards that have a lot of opportunity. I'm talking about the low price of what it's available for now, and I counter-distinct that with the fact that it might be worth a lot more at some point in the future. So are you doing what I'm doing? And if you are, what's the lowest you'll go in terms of keeping your interest? Are you willing to buy dollar cards that just are too tantalizing to pass up? There's no downside and not million-dollar upside, but would you have a lower limit?
I wouldn't say the things I'm holding or putting away long-term are quarter cards, probably. I'm very transactional with cards like that because I believe...
So you're not stowing them away.
No, I'm not stowing those away generally. But I think the big picture and what I try to use as the defining outline for how I think, I'm very contrarian. Generally, if everyone is chasing an asset in any category, whether it's NVIDIA, stock, or you pick it, I don't care, Bitcoin, you name it. If everybody is chasing one asset, then what eventually happens is either you get trampled or you get to the finish line and there's nowhere to go and you're all looking at each other saying, what now? And this is going to happen. The entire economy is that way. But when I look at the hobby, people have blinders on. I had to deal with this at least more than anyone because they looked and said, it's unlicensed. And I looked at it and said, hold on, it's still Mahomes' autograph. It's still Tom Brady's autograph. And they said, no one likes unlicensed. First off, that's false because some people do. Second off, today, anything they say, there was a time no one wanted flagship cards today. Then in the boom, they got really hot and they did, and now they don't again. But I think the problem is we think the eternity is going to be what it is today. In licensing, I said, look at the Joe Montana rookie, look at the Walter Payton rookie, they're unlicensed. And I made arguments and thought, and I finally just said, listen, the only way stubborn people will ever see that there's another side to the equation besides what they're eating in big droves at the all-you-can-eat hobby influencer buffet, the only way they're going to see it is to watch some of these trends change.
Exactly.
And that's why, for me, I see you in the dollar boxes that shows up. You don't. I'm buying non-sports.
Yeah.
Because there's no way you can tell me a Knights card of Madonna should sell for $1.50 or $2. No way. From Panini. 1985 Panini sticker of Madonna is $1.50. So I will buy those all day, every day. I'll buy 65 Beatles. You know, I'll buy 1956 Topps U.S. Presidents.
But these
there's
are
no all... way I should be able to buy Abraham Lincoln for $8 from 1956 when a common from 1956 is 20. So you're telling me Bob Turley is $15 in 1956 Topps, but Abraham Lincoln is 12? Are you out of your mind?
And there are a lot less of them.
95% of the people in America have heard of Abraham Lincoln. Less than 1% have heard of Bob Turley. It's crazy to me. And so I'm not scared to identify value in places other people don't. Top Trump's cards from the UK. They have cards of Taylor Swift.
So you're saying these are nuggets. They're hiding in plain sight.
They're hiding in plain sight.
And so you're panning for gold, and everybody else has a pan that is so porous that everything's slipping through.
The problem is
they're looking for dollar size nuggets, and you're pulling out quarter size nuggets by the handful.
It's all vision. Where are you setting the finish line? If you're setting the finish line at a 40-yard dash, you got to look at new assets that everybody's chasing. If you're running a marathon, then you've got to look at assets that stand the test of time. If you're buying brand new quarterbacks, those are not marathon assets. 90% of them are losers. Even the ones that are good are losers 90% of the time.
Okay.
You have to allow for the idea that the way people view collectibles can completely be different than it is today. And you have to have a vision that it's just a matter of time before people uncover things. And it happens. People start to uncover old assets and they're like, holy cow, that's pretty cool.
New analogy for you. Because you've mentioned the sprint, the immediate gratification aspect, the short-term thinking, as well as marathon. okay, which is very long-term, very grueling. But many people think, and my kids did this, the most grueling event in a high school track meet, and maybe college too, is the intermediate hurdles, where you're sprinting and hurdling and all that stuff. You're doing it all the way around the track. That's what I think we're doing. We're doing the event that nobody else wants to do, that is not too long, not too short, has aspects of both. It's a little bit of a sprint. It's a little bit of endurance. And it's technique a little bit.
It's not a show-off approach to the hobby. You can't go on Insta and flex your $3 Madonna card. But I have bought a lot of things for a dollar or two or three or five that people said, what the heck are you buying that for, that are worth $100 now? Because I knew that Taylor Swift, being the biggest name in the world, her cards were going to be worth $40 or $50. I was buying them for a dollar. Like, I had to buy every one of them.
Yeah, but this is pre-grading. You weren't buying them graded. Once you buy them graded, it's a whole different...
Well, that's a whole other podcast.
Because
graded changes everything.
Changes everything. When you said everybody, Warren Buffett's famous for this, of the everybody is when the postman is investing in this stock. At the local Wendy's is, and you hear the buzz from everybody all the way down the line. That's the everybody that's a problem, okay? So in our industry, what everybody's doing, when it's that inclusive everybody, it's troubling. Go the other way or do something they're not doing.
And that's why the 21-22 boom, we knew something was up, because I'll be honest, I was the most popular guy at every dinner party I went to, because cards were actually something to talk about.
Everybody knew about it.
Everyone wanted to talk about that. And I would have people at the table running these serious companies. I had a guy running a hedge fund at the table. No one asked him a single question about his industry, but I was getting peppered with, am I supposed to be buying these cards up? Because they're going crazy. This guy, he's huge. His brother's CEO of Burger King. No one has any questions for him, but they want to know about the hobby. We know that everybody has gone somewhere in the hobby now.
But the beauty of what you're doing is when they look to shoot down what you're doing, or if they think, well, that doesn't make any sense, I've not heard about that. If it's so popular, I would have heard about it. They look at the pop reports and they're either elated, as you would be, that the pop reports are so low for those cards, or they're discouraged. Those aren't even popular because there's a lot of them and not many are graded.
And the thing is,
you can read it either way. Upside down thinking.
The problem is you mold arguments. As someone who is a naysayer about some things and a soothsayer about others, we mold the argument. We mold the data. We interpret the data to match our opinion. Confirmation bias. So we decide that a low pop card is not interesting, or we decide that it's an incredibly rare find.
Yeah.
We decide that Acuna tops updates. Acuna tops updates. There's 28,000 PSA 10s. The average Instagram show your carder will say, that is ridiculous. That card is dime a dozen junk wax. Then someone intelligent about baseball cards, in my opinion, someone else to say I'm an idiot. I say, if you're telling me there are 28,000 fans who want the flagship Acuna and a PSA 10, never mind the guys who want 50 of them. If you think 28,000 is too much, or Luka Doncic's Prism PSA 10 at 25,000 is too much, then our hobby is in big trouble because we're not as big as we thought we were. I have to believe these pops are absolutely not too big for me. For most, it is. If it's more than a pop 5 or 6, it's too much for most people. They don't understand pop 28,000, but it's all perspective. If, again, a Bob Turley PSA 10, if there's 10 of them, that's too many because there's not 10 customers for that card. There's two. Three.
You're talking about market equilibrium, and you're talking about market equilibrium today, that the number of buyers and sellers, and it's price related, regardless of what grade it is, it has to be a price that 28,000 people are saying, hey, I want this at that price. If this thing 10Xs, then anything you're doing is going to look good. 28,000, that'd be equivalent of 2,800.
Yeah, if it's 2,800, the card would be worth 6 times.
And the new people want that. So
it's just, and again, the problem is in every element. You have this, it's all about vision, and it's about being able to say, I'm not going to listen to anyone else but my gut and my analysis of what I see in front of me.
Well,
and people can't do that because, a lot of people listen to me and they believe that what I say is truth because I say it, and it's an opinion. Yeah. I have an opinion that it's good to buy 85 Panini Princes and Michael Jackson's and Madonna's and Elton John's, and there are people who listen to me when I tell people that. And I start seeing them scoop this stuff up. Top Trumps, Taylor Swift, and Dua Lipa's, whoever it is. Ariana Grande and Selena Gomez. They go Beyonce, Rihanna. They're going to buy all those cars because they see me buying them. I could be wrong. So don't just take my word for it. But do your own analysis and say, just because it's not the hot area of the market right now,
But we talked about AI. AI, in some cases, can be indiscriminately trusting the internet in some massive sense of who knows where the information comes from that is then synthesized. So when you talk about we, and you talk about yourself or myself, I'm doing my own research. You're doing your own research, and that emboldens you to say, I got this. On the other hand, you have to trust somebody or something. You have the benefit, I have the benefit of trusting my own eyes over the years.
My gut, our experiences tell us so much.
But the average person can't do that because they weren't there during the day. Their biggest decision is, who do I trust? And that's a problem because they trust the person with the biggest mind.
You're truly old school. I am like medium school. I started coming into your store.
I know.
In 1987.
I
started coming in the store. So I'm old school compared to most of these wet behind the ears guys in the hobby now. But I'm a kid in the hobby compared to you. You were around and doing this before I knew what was what. If your perspective is 5 years from now, are you going to look for a source that's 30 years or 50 years in the hobby? Is anyone going to really look to me because I have 35 years perspective? Or are they going to look to the guy that's had success or notoriety for the last 3 years because that's their window is 3 years?
One of my big themes when I meet with organizations is that optimization frequently is better than maximization. With optimization, you're not looking for the person that has the most experience necessarily. Now, you don't want zero experience, but you might have optimum experience. I may have more experience. Optimum means you are there for the meaningful stuff. You have all the information that you need. And frankly, you're younger than I am, so then you have that perspective. We're not telling everybody go to the oldest sages. We're talking about the portfolio of advisors that have seen some of these eras that can say, I've seen this before. Older is not always better.
But what you've done is you've been a pivoter and open-minded to the new world of cards.
But everybody,
how many guys from the old school are staunch deniers that any card made after 1980 has no value? And honestly, cards after 1970 have minimal value. that really in long-term holdable cards date back from 1970. These guys are very close-minded. If the card shines, they want to put on glasses and go the other way. You've been different because you're open-minded too.
It's the whole hobby.
But that puts more value on your wisdom than, you know, the old stonks, you guys. If you walk up to their table and you're holding a prison card, they act like you're holding...
It's kryptonite.
Or it's a cross and they're a vampire. You think you're going to kill them. You know, they don't want to see anything shiny. It's like they're allergic to it. They'll break out if they see a prison card. What you have to do, though, is say my collecting goal or my investing goal, whatever my goal is, whatever in this industry or hobby, my goal is X. Find the person or group of people who truly
are. A naysayer. Find somebody that's going to joust with you or say...
Challenge the way you think.
Challenge it, yeah.
And I think that's the problem is, I think, again, when you have a two-year horizon, you're looking at these two-year speculators who are on Insta flashing their cards. You're not looking at guys who've been through the ups and the downs. Then in 1994, when we had a distributor, as you man, we could not sell a baseball card. They went on strike, and I thought the industry was over. I was telling my wife, we are in big trouble, babe. This industry is going to be over. We can't sell a baseball card. It is dead. For about 3 months while the baseball strike in 1994. It was disastrous. They've never seen this. They've seen this decline in prices.
Well, they think it's impossible.
The only reason they've suffered through this dramatic drop of prices and been okay is that most of them got to enjoy the upside. So they're like, I just gave a bunch of profits back. But the guys that came in at the top.
At the peak?
90% of them are gone. They're selling and getting the heck out and doing something else because their experience is poor to them. So the guys that are in here to stay have been through some up and down, but what we went through in 21, 22 and back down to now, that's nothing because we haven't gone through a liquidity crisis ever. And unless you were here in 1994 or in the hobby before 1980, there was a liquidity thing before in the old days of cards. And again, I wasn't wheeling and dealing in 1980. Cards just weren't liquid like they are now.
The velocity
wasn't the same.
My selling horizon, I think, is 10 years. And don't tell me I'm too old to have that selling horizon, but that's the way I think. If I buy something, if it's not going to sell for 10 years, that's fine. Now, at some point, I'm going to have to say, you know what? My life expectancy is going to get in the way, but everybody ought to have a selling horizon. If it's 2 years or 2 months or 2 days, there's nothing wrong with that. Just acknowledge that's what it is. I'm not going to be good wisdom for somebody that wants to do quick flips, even though I do give advice on that, and that is buy right.
That's getting harder too.